Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City. And I'd like to welcome you. Today, we're going to learn about an active ingredient from the Caribbean sea cucumber and how it could improve treatment for malignant mesothelioma. Also, can inositol, a nutrient in the B complex, prevent and heal cancer? And a nutrient-rich tomato extract is effective in combating heart disease. And also, the first human clinical trial for a type of vitamin B3 is linked with multiple health benefits, and I'll get into that, in helping your cells live longer lives. And also, deeper insights into oats, because oats can help lower cholesterol big time, and a lot more on health and healing. Then we're going to have a guest in the second part of our program. He is Tom Tolles. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning political editorialist, writer for the Washington Post, and he's going to talk about how climate change denial is threatening our planet, destroying our politics. We also today will share a different point of view than Michael Moore. Michael was on the Kelly Show, Megyn Kelly Show on Fox last night, and he made some very specific statements, including that, yes, he was bashing Trump, but then he said, the only person who can save us is Hillary Clinton. And then he went through how she could do everything. She's a great defender of women and children. She'd clean up our environment. Well, unfortunately, I don't know where Michael got his research, but I'll share a different point of view. And I would have hoped that he would have supported Jill Stein so that we could indeed help to get that information out about building a new base to start a more progressive future. That'll come. Also today, we're going to have some audio clips I think you'll find of interest on this very topic. And we're going to look at more truths about Hillary Clinton's emails. Oh, by the way, when asked, he said he didn't care about the emails at all. He didn't care about anything coming about Hillary at all. He doesn't read it. He doesn't care about it. It's not important. But it is important. It's extremely important that we know where she's getting her talking points, what her real views are. So Jill Stein, you'll hear from her today. She thinks that Hillary Clinton is scarier than Trump. Also, more truths about WikiLeaks from Lee Camp and the illusion of choice. We believe we have a choice. You know, George Carlin believes we don't. It's all an illusion. That's all coming at you. So let's begin. People in the United States never use a Caribbean sea cucumber. They probably have never heard of it. It's very good for arthritis, by the way. But now, according to the Cancer Center of Medical University of Vienna, it does more. It is good for malignant pleural mesothelioma, which is a very difficult cancer to treat. And chemotherapy has not been very successful at it. And the active agent originally occurs that is effective in the Caribbean sea cucumber, a marine-dwelling tuccinate. So the study results were recently published in Molecular Cancer Therapeutics, a therapy-oriented journal of the American Association of Cancer Research, with around 90 new cases per year in Austria. The malignant pleural mesothelioma is one of the rarer forms of cancer. However, it's on the increase, and it's a very aggressive form of cancer that's associated with asbestos and is routinely treated with a combination of chemotherapy, surgery, and radiation, but without good results. So just write this down. So if you have anyone who you know has this form of malignant pleural mesothelioma, the Caribbean sea cucumber. Also, inositol, I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L, has been shown to help prevent and heal cancer, according to Natural Health. And we know that most people who have cancer are going to use chemotherapy, the vast majority. The problem is, the oncologists in the entire cancer community have failed miserably. About 97% of chemotherapy patients with advanced cancer die. There's a very small 3% survival level where it shows efficacy that the chemotherapy actually did any good. And so the question is, what else could be used? And so we're seeing now that a brain neurotransmitter and a fat conversion, this is inositol, can also show promise as a great nutrient for preventing many kinds of cancer, especially lung cancer and colon cancer. Inositol is a vital nutrient for your brain. I mainly recommend people who have any kind of learning problems, autistic problems, minimal brain use, anything involving the brain where there's a problem in the brain. Inositol is generally very good. And it's produced many different ways according to natural health. It's sometimes categorized as being part of the B vitamin, B8, because like the bees, it's water-soluble and does not stay in the body long once it's produced or consumed. In actuality, inositol is a carbohydrate. Now, many people prefer to put the powder supplement form in smoothies because of its sweet taste and creamy texture. Plus, it does not have any negative effects associated with sugar, which is a real plus for those who wish to avoid sucrose. Now, a healthy body will produce about 4 grams of inositol a day through the kidneys if you're eating oranges, grapefruit, the melons like honeydew, crenshaw, watermelon, cantaloupe, walnuts, almonds, pine nuts, macadamias, pistachios, pecans, sunflower seeds, sesame seeds, pumpkin seeds, oats, brown rice, corn, all the beans, chickpeas, and lecithin. So that's where you can get it, or you can get it in supplemental form. And we know that there's a side effect from having too little, where we're inositol deficient, constipation, hair loss, high blood cholesterol levels, mood swings and irritability, and skin rashes. So inositol has a long history in lung cancer prevention. And the best news is that inositol in these studies is a very strong preventative of many forms of cancer. And the history of the discovery of inositol is interesting, and it's linked to one of the great contributions in the natural treatment of cancer. A Dr. Lee Wattenberg, often called the father of chemo prevention, was also the first to detect inositol's healing effects on lung cancer. Now, this was significant because this research on inositol in particular showed how common nutrients in general may be used to prevent, in some cases, even heal cancer. And there's also what is called IP6, or inositol hexaphosphate. That helps prevent colon cancer. A few years ago, another researcher, a Dr. Shamsuddin, now at the University of Massachusetts School of Medicine, piggybacked on Wattenberg's initial investigations to create a substance called IP6, which is a form of the nutrient called inositol hexaphosphate. And that was very important in cellular signaling. So that's good too. So now you know there's one more nutrient to help you with cancer. Tomatoes are important. If you want to make your own tomato juice, that's really delicious. You just put the good ripe tomatoes into a blender. I would add in some coconut water. I would add in a little bit of garlic raw, an onion, sweet onion raw, some horseradish, little bit of cayenne, black pepper as well, a little bit of turmeric, and then you turn it on blend and let it blend until it's smooth. Now that is a powerful immune-enhancing viral and bacterial and fungi-killing drink. And it tastes just wonderful, a real zesty taste to it. And if you made, let's say, a quart will last easily 3 days in the refrigerator. You could put some lemon juice in there as well. And ginger, if you really want. Ginger will overwhelm all the other tastes, but it's every one of those things are going to be helping your body heal if you're feeling under the weather. So in this study, what they found was that the carotenoid-rich tomatoes can exhibit a process of lessening the thickening of the artery walls, and which is typical in heart disease. So the carotenoids from tomatoes are great for helping clean up the arteries, cleanse them, and strengthen the walls of the arteries. Quote from the study, the use of a whole tomato food extract is a method of addressing oxidation in LDL, which is low-density lipoprotein, the most dangerous form of cholesterol, and improving metabolic picture following a meal is a new concept. Well, new to you, not to all of us who are in the natural health field. We've been using this for a long time, but they did a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study. 146 healthy, normal weight individuals were assigned to take a glass of this for 2 weeks or a placebo. And there was a substantial difference in the LDL and oxidative stress if they took a placebo. They didn't have any change. If they took the lycopene-rich tomatoes, they had a big response. So make sure you're getting your tomatoes, tomato juice, tomato sauce, and a dish is also good. And something that we don't think about, we think of a pasta with pasta sauce. But what about pasta sauce on brown rice? What about pasta sauce filling up a baked potato? Now, to make a really good pasta sauce, there are three things people do not use that I believe they should. One is to puree some olives, three or four different types of olives, greens and black olives, and put them in. Also, I would saute some diced garlic, sweet onions, and then fennel and anise, both. And then you make your tomato sauce at low heat. And then once your baked potato is done, you can scoop out your baked potato, mash it all up, then put the mashed up baked potato into the sauce, stir it all around, and put it all back into the baked potato skin. It is delicious. And if you don't want your baked potatoes to be browned, which you don't, you want them to still be having a high level of integrity in their nutrition, massage the potato with coconut oil, either coconut oil or mustard seed oil or macadamia oil. You'll get a much more exotic flavor if you have macadamia oil, but they all are resistant to high heat. But also, don't take your baked potato up to bake, which is over 400 degrees. Try it at 300 degrees. It'll take a little longer. But if you take a knife and you cut about an inch and a half, 2 inches in, on all four sides, going down the whole length and the width of the potato, that allows, as the heat is building up, it dissipates, so you don't end up with a potato that is overcooked on the outside and fairly raw on the inside. This means the whole potato is evenly cooked, but not overcooked. You don't have that browning and acrylamide accumulating crispy crust. I remember when I was growing up, my older brother loved baked potato skins, so I would scoop out my potato and then give him the potato, and he'd cut potato skin. He would cut it up because he always liked that. In point of fact, the potato skin contains a lot of the calcium, magnesium, and alpha-lipoic acid. It's very nutritious, but not when it's all crisped up, because then it's overcooked and those nutrients are substantially adversely affected. So it's just a different way of using tomato sauce. Instead of just on a pasta, use it on this. Also, you can do something a little more exotic. You can make your pasta sauce the way I suggest. You can put capers in there also. But then take a ripe avocado and mash it up and then mold it into the middle of brown rice. Let's say you have a plate of brown rice or a bowl of brown rice. Scoop out the middle, take your a cup, a regular cup, and you form the avocado in the cup, then you put it right over, so you're molded out avocado, then you pour your pasta sauce over the avocado in the middle of the brown rice dish, so you've got this wonderful exotic flavor, and then squeeze the juice of two lemons over all of that, and you've got an extraordinarily exotic flavor. Just something to add a little more interest to our food. And also from the University of Iowa Health Center, in the first controlled clinical trial of vitamin B3, researchers have shown that the compound is safe for humans and increases level of a cell metabolite that is critical for cell energy production and protection against stress and DNA damage. So this study shows that it boosts the level of the nutrient in the cell metabolite. It's known as NAD, and it can produce multiple health benefits, including resistance to weight gain, improved control of blood sugar, improved cholesterol, reduced nerve damage, and a longer lifespan. All that from NAD, which is vitamin B3, or it's a form of vitamin B3 that really is one of our newest anti-aging, anti-disease nutrients. And this was published in Nature Communications, the nicotinamide riboside. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. For those of you who listen to this program over a telephone, live each day, Monday through Friday at noon Eastern Standard Time and Tuesday evening, 7 to 8, Progressive Commentary Hour, you can, let me give you the number, 701-801-3662, 701-801-3662. I've given you other numbers, and that's simply because we have so many people wanting to listen by telephone now, that one line would be filled up so you have others. And for those of you who want to go to the archive and download programs, you can do that as well. Our archive number to listen to anywhere in America, including all of North America, including Canada, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. And I want to play a few audio clips before I share some of my own commentary with you. And this is directed to those who are voting for Hillary Clinton, A, because she's a woman, or B, because, as Michael Moore believes, she can solve all of our problems, and especially the problems of women and children. So please listen in here, see what you think, and it might inspire you to reconsider the wisdom of that choice. We're going to start with Jill Stein. She thinks Hillary Clinton is scarier than Donald Trump.
Hillary Clinton, who wants to start an air war with Russia over Syria by calling for a no-fly zone. We have 2,000 nuclear missiles on hair trigger alert, and Mikhail Gorbachev, the former premier of the Soviet Union, is saying we are closer to a nuclear war than we have ever been. Under Hillary Clinton, we could slide into nuclear war very quickly from her declared policy in Syria. So I won't sleep well at night if Donald Trump is elected, but I sure won't sleep well at night if Hillary Clinton is elected. Fortunately, we have another choice other than these two candidates who are both promoting lethal policies. But on the issue of war and nuclear weapons and the potential for nuclear war, it's actually Hillary's policies, which are much scarier than Donald Trump, who does not want to go to war with Russia. He wants to seek modes of working together, which is the route that we need to follow.
Okay, that's one perspective. We have to break this into pieces to truly understand the implications of what Jill Stein was suggesting. Hillary Clinton has been a super neocon, meaning she believes in aggressive, imperialistic policies, regime changes. She has been directly implicated in the coup in Honduras and in Ukraine. She has also fully supported and been the primary voice behind Libya's complete disintegration into a failed state with over 50,000 dead and over 10 million made homeless. and now is a hotbed of activity for ISIS and terrorist groups that never existed there in the past. She also is pushing NATO to challenge Russia, and she also wanted to challenge China. And she's given absolute complete confidence in Israel. She will back Israel, and we know how radicalized Israel's current regime is in the Likud under Netanyahu when it comes to Iran. So keep that in mind. Now, Clinton is a narcissist. He's immature. He has no empathy that I can see. He is a functional illiterate, as he has no depth and breadth of knowledge and insights on anything that's unique. He has an extraordinarily limited vocabulary, and he is highly misogynist. Here's the issue. It's which person would do less damage. When you have a war, you have a nuclear war, or you have a cyber war, or you have some combination of nuclear, cyber, and ground war, you're going to have millions of people this time around killed. So just imagine what a person's suggesting. One person's not going to go to war. The other is going to go to war. She's already stated that nuclear option's on the table and has put $1 trillion into supporting a new type of nuclear weapon. Now, let's go to another clip to get a little different perspective on this issue. This is, we're going to hear now from more truths about Hillary's email leaks from WikiLeaks from Lee Camp, who's on RTV. And you might not have heard of Lee Camp before. He is a funny guy, very loud, but listen to what he has to say.
From one of Hillary's leaked private speeches, environmentalists say, "Will you promise never to take any fossil fuels out of the earth ever again?" "No, I won't promise that. Get a life." We'd love to have a life, Miss Clinton. The problem is, a lot of us are worried what kind of life that will be if we destroy the planet's ability to deal with us. Honestly, the Earth is doing everything it can to keep up with the virus that is us. It's taking all kinds of vitamin C boosters and drinking green juice, ginger root. But if we burn all of the fossil fuels, we're screwed. So I'd rather have this life where I say to people who want to defend fracking like you do, all right, I'd rather have this kind of life. Moving on, in a private speech to Wall Street, Clinton said that the people who should fix the industry and basically regulate it are the banks themselves. That sounds like great idea. She also said, there are so many places in our country where the banks are not doing what they need to do because they're scared of regulations. They're scared of the other shoe dropping. They're just plain scared. Yes, that's the problem. The banks are scared of regulations. That would explain why the big banks are so much smaller than they were before the 08 collapse. Oh, wait. No, they're not. They're bigger than ever. As we saw with Wells Fargo just last week, they've been bending us over and banking us silly ever since the collapse. Their greed and predatory practices created the collapse, and they enriched themselves in the process. Yet you have the nerve to get paid $250,000 to stand there in front of that room of vipers and tell them they are suffering from too much regulation?
That's Lee Camp. Now let's go to one of the more serious ones, and that is we've been told that who do you want to press the button when there's a nuclear attack? Well, here's a response to that.
Part of the Clinton campaign's rhetoric in the stupid election is the one-liner. Do you really trust Trump to have his finger on the button? Now, that's stupid for many reasons. First, this is not a Ben Affleck movie. There is no button. There is what they stupidly call a football, which is a briefcase with documents in it that explain steps a president would take if he or she wanted to set off our nukes. It travels around with the president and is protected by many people. But there is no button or one step that any human on the planet could take to blow up the world with our nukes. So Clinton is just trying to scare people away from Trump with her stupid button one-liner. But since she brought up the button metaphor, then it's worth noting that she's already pressed a war-inducing button while Secretary of State. She pressed that button every single time she signed off on an arms deal that sold high-powered weapons to other countries. She pressed that button no less than 36 times. When Clinton was Secretary of State, she approved $165 billion in arms sales to 20 countries. That's double what the State Department approved under George W. Bush's entire second term. Clinton also approved another $151 billion of weapons sales and another 16 Pentagon-brokered arms deals. So as Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton sold more than $300 billion worth of weapons to other countries. What makes it even crazier is that many of those deals bolstered the military power of countries ruled by authoritarian regimes. Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Algeria, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and Oman. These are all countries that our State Department condemns for human rights abuses. They treat their women like cattle. They behead their citizens for speaking out against them. They are really, really dangerous countries, and Hillary Clinton gave them $300 billion worth of weapons. Craziest of all, they all gave money to the Clinton Foundation. So, while Clinton's campaigning, trying to scare everyone with the one-liner about Trump having his finger on the button, she's the one handing out weapons like candy to people who have been using them to slaughter innocent civilians by the hundreds of thousands. That is what's real, not the button. And that level of fear-mongering and hypocrisy clearly, really presses my buttons. Tonight, let's talk about that.
Okay, now, to finish this up, let's hear what George Carlin has to say about choices. You think you have a choice? And what we're hearing now is the choice of the better of two evils. Well, it's still evil. Jill Stein is not in that category. And yet she doesn't seem to warrant even being considered. Now listen to what Jill Stein would do. She would close down all those military bases, 900 of them around the world. She would have universal health care. Oh yeah, last night Michael Moore actually stated that Hillary Clinton is for universal health care. At the same time, you said you don't care about those emails at all. Well, in the emails, Michael, it showed that on 44 separate occasions to governments around the world, she promoted and advocated for the Trans-Pacific Partnership while publicly saying, well, I'm not sure. Yeah, she was sure. But she has, as we also found out from the email, two positions, a public one that mollified the public and a private position that aligns itself and harmonizes with big business. She also is against universal health care. She will never allow universal health care. But go back to when she was the president's wife and co-president, and it was her initiative to start a Clinton health program where over 400 members of the pharmaceutical industry, the insurance industry, and the profit hospitals were brought together, and they molded what would be our health care program. By the way, in that program, they actually had a $5,000 fine and 5 years in jail for any holistic therapy that was offered, meaning the only therapy allowed would be one that was sanctioned by the National Academy of Sciences and published in the Library of Medicine. So if you were using homeopathy, you're going to jail. Chelation therapy, ozone therapy, hyperbaric, you're going to jail. Vitamin supplements, diet, you're going to jail. And that's the part of it that I fought. And went all across the country informing people and doctors who didn't know this until we showed them the draft that this is what's happening. Well, now WikiLeaks says she's against universal health care because she's taking money from the hospital associations, the pharmaceutical associations, and the private hospitals. So you can't have it both ways. Either you pay attention to the emails, in which case it informs you what her actual mindset is, where you say the emails don't count, but she's going to save the world, then support that with documentation. One person who doesn't need any documentation because he has something called wit, and in that wit is common sense, is George Carlin. Here's what he has to say about the illusion of choice.
We like war. We like war. We're a warlike people. We like war because we're good at it. You know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice. This country's only 200 years old, and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war every 20 years in this country, so we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore. Huh? Can't build a decent car, can't make a TV set or a VCR worth. Got no steel industry left, can't educate our young people, can't get health care to our old people, but we can bomb out of your country, all right. Especially if your country is full of brown people. That's our new job in the world, bombing brown people. Iraq, Panama, Grenada, Libya, you got some brown people in your country, tell them to watch. Bomb them! But when's the last white people you can remember that we bombed? Can you remember the last white? Can you remember any white people we've ever bombed? The Germans, those are the only ones. And that's only because they were trying to cut in on our action. They wanted to dominate the world. That's our job! And you probably noticed, I don't feel about that war the way we were told we were supposed to feel about that war, the way we were ordered and instructed by the United States government to feel about that war. My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do, it's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I don't just roll over when I'm told to. Sad to say, most Americans just roll over on command. Not me. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. Nothing. Zero. Nope. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country, who in the case of the Persian Gulf War were nothing more than unpaid employees of the Department of Defense, and who most of the time function as kind of an unofficial public relations agency for the United States government. So I don't listen to them, I don't really believe in my country, and I gotta tell you folks, I don't get all choked up about yellow ribbons and American flags. I consider them to be symbols, and I leave symbols to the symbol-minded.
I'm talking about the fact that a war is rich old men protecting their property by sending middle class and lower class young men off to die. Forget these foolish elections. The owners of this country don't care about the poor and the
owners
and
of this country. Is this Karl Marx talking to me? The owners of this country are the voters of this country.
You're wrong about that, my friend.
Aren't the owners of this country the voters in this country
who elected George Bush? No, they're not. Listen, for politics, these elections are a charade. It is. They are meant to. Well, I'll tell you, listen, just listen for a minute. Learn a little something. The elections and politicians are in place in order to give Americans the illusion that they have freedom of choice. You don't really have choice in this country. All the things that are important reduced in choice. Newspapers in a city, how many? Used to be 3-4, now it's 1 or 2, they're owned by the same people, and they also own a radio station. Give these people a voting day every year so that they'll have the illusion of meaningless choice. Meaningless choice that we go like slaves and say, "Yo, I voted." The limits of debate in this country are established before the debate even begins, and everyone else is marginalized. They're made to seem either to be communists or some sort of disloyal person, a kook, there's a word, and now it's conspiracy. See, they've made that something that should not be even entertained for a minute, that powerful people might get together and have a plan. Doesn't happen. You're a conspiracy buff. Conspiracy buff.
Okay. Not as a result of a conspiracy, but because...
You don't need a formal conspiracy.
Right.
When interests converge, these people went to the same universities and fraternities. They're on the same boards of directors. They're on the same country clubs. They have like interests. They don't need to call a meeting. They know what's good for them. They're getting it. And there used to be 7 oil companies. There are now 3. It will soon be 2. The things that matter in this country have been reduced in choice. There are 2 political parties. There are a handful of insurance companies. There are about 6 or 7 information things. But if you want a bagel, there are 23 flavors because you have the illusion. You have the illusion.
And that's George Carlin. And my final thought for Michael Moore and the people who support his idea that Hillary Clinton will save everyone, including the women and children. He emphasized women and children. But I would also hope that she would advocate for gay and lesbians. I advocate for gay and lesbians. I believe they have rights and should be honored as any other citizen. But I got a list here, and I'm just puzzled by how you can, at the one time, from maybe $5 million to the foundation, and if you're gay, in you're to death. Now, in Kuwait, you get 7 years in prison, but Kuwait, $10 million. So you're put 3 years in prison, $6 million. If you're in Qatar, 3 years in prison, $5 million Clinton Foundation. Brunei, it's a death penalty. You're going to be killed. They gave $5 million. Oman, 3 years in prison, $5 million Clinton Foundation. United Arab Emirates, if you're gay, you're put to death, $5 million. Algeria, 3 years in prison, $500,000. And Bahrain, they restrict your freedom, and it's $100,000. So the countries that Hillary Clinton is friends with has never criticized, has given her $61,600,000 to the Clinton Foundation, and these are the people who would not be looking after the interests of gays. So how are you going to look after? And that doesn't even count how they treat women in these societies. But also, I've got a question for Michael concerning Hillary's protecting women and children. If she's a real advocate for women and children, what about the mothers of the 500,000 children who died in the first Iraq war in 1991 because of sanctions that her husband and her and Madeleine Albright approved? What about the women and children that right now are dying, being made homeless by the millions, starving to death in Yemen because Saudi Arabia, where she sold those $300 billion, some of that weaponry went to Saudi Arabia, and it's an illegal war, and it's violating human rights. So what about the women in Syria and children? What about the women and children in Libya? What about in Afghanistan? What about in Iraq? What about in Honduras? What about in the Ukraine? So is she really talking about the wealthy women and children? Then indeed, Michael, she probably does have their interests at stake, providing that they can write a check to come to one of her fundraisers. But for women of color, is this the same person who was on the board of directors of Walmart that had one of the worst records in the world for women in working families and virtually in poverty? Did she not say that Sam Walton, the creator of Walmart, quote, taught me a great deal about corporate integrity and success? She is a neocon. And where will more women find work in the future? In the military. Well, that's really a good way to inspire more on ethical principles of feminism. And how does the continuation of military deaths and injuries and severe psychological trauma? We did the math. How many Americans have taken their own lives since 1999? Military personnel? 126,000. And how many children have gone fatherless with our incarceration program? Bill Clinton's three strikes and you're out, stripping welfare funds to profit and subsidize the prison industrial complex. Under Bill Clinton and her, his welfare reform slashed $54 billion, leading to doubling of poverty to 1.5 million people. Most of those were women and children. How many women and children become homeless when Bill slashed public housing by 61%? What job opportunities did Bill deny prisoners returning to society after they've served their sentences and to their children and families when he eliminated the Pell education grants for prisoners? So, yeah, I guess if you say she supports women and children, maybe she does. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to come back with our guests in a moment. Before we do, there are a group of individuals being led by Mitchell Cohen from WBAI who are going to be protesting outside of Hillary Clinton's Brooklyn office. Here is their announcement, so if you'd like to join them, please do so. What is good for?
Absolutely. Again, y'all. Let's not wait until we're at the brink of nuclear war. Join the anti-war rally at the Brooklyn Borough Hall steps on Saturday, November 5th at 1 p.m. and march to Hillary Clinton's campaign headquarters in Brooklyn Heights before she's elected and before we're exterminated. Saturday, November 5th at 1 p.m. at the Brooklyn Borough Hall steps. I said, whoa! Good God, y'all! What is it good for?
Absolutely! Let's get started again! Whoa! Okay. Now let's go to our guest who's standing by in Washington, D.C., Tom Tolles. That's T-O-L-E-S. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning political editorial cartoonist and writer for The Washington Post, and he focuses on progressive issues, in particular climate change and its denial. He was previously been the editorial cartoonist for U.S. News and World Report, The New Republic magazine, The New York Daily News, and others. And he is with us now. Nice to have you with us today, Tom.
Hi, Gary. Nice to be here.
Tom, I recently had Guy McPherson on the program, and as you are probably aware, Guy takes a rather severe view of the pace of climate change, along with many Australian and Canadian climatologists, speaking primarily on the scientific evidence of climate change. So I'd like to put attention now on the more practical issues regarding climate change and its real impact upon our lives. So you ask the question, why should I give a damn when it comes to climate change? And this is the real question everyone needs to ask themselves, but also educate them about what it really is. So please share with us why we should all give a damn, especially if our children, our nephews, nieces, grandchildren, who will be inheriting the mess of our boomer generation, created world climate environment. So take your time. The forum is yours.
Well, thank you very much, Gary. You just asked me to pretty nearly give an encyclopedia on the climate change issue. I will try to hit some of the highlights. The science of it, which has been in a ridiculous amount of dispute, is actually founded on a very simple, well-established scientific understanding that carbon dioxide is a heat-trapping gas in the atmosphere. This has been long known and never in dispute. The hypothesis on global warming came about because industrial production was putting significantly greater amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, leading towards an actual doubling of it. So the simple version of the argument is if you increase heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere, likely you're going to get a climatic change as a result. And this has been now tested and examined from just about every angle, and including current measurements. And the conclusions are now scientifically quite distinct and clear and beyond dispute, which is that we are changing the climate to a degree and at a rate that is unprecedented in human history, and that by far the most effects to humans specifically and ecosystems in general will be disruptive and damaging. In terms of ecosystems, we have new evidence of the Great Barrier Reef off Australia, and large sections of that are dying. The oceans are absorbing a good bit of the heat, and that's being trapped. It's warming the waters. It's melting ice. The sea levels have risen measurably. This will increase storm surges in any kind of storm. On land, the increased heat in the atmosphere traps more moisture, which leads to greater evaporation in some areas, leading to drought, and increasing downpours in others, leading to floods. You also get higher energy potential in the atmosphere, leading to more devastating storms. And in terms of human impact, there's obviously the immediate and direct effects of flooding and drought and fires, but you also get indirect effects because if farming is disrupted in a nation state such as Syria, which it has been, you end up with political instability, migration, and all kinds of cascading social, political, military effects all around. And we're experiencing all of that right now. And unfortunately, as things stand right now, the problem is continuing to get worse. Recognition of the problem is beginning to catch up with the data and the need, but the political system, particularly in the United States, has fallen very far behind in addressing and dealing with this. And the book that I wrote with, co-authored with Michael Mann, the climate scientist, is an attempt to help educate, point out some of the bad guys, and move the political process forward towards reduction in carbon sources for the atmosphere and a transition to renewable energy sources.
Well, that's a very good overview. No, that's excellent in a summary. Thank you. Others have spoken on this program about the underlying causes of climate change denial and the almost unanimous scientific certainty that it is causally anthropogenic. Even the U.S. Department of Defense lists climate change as our nation's greatest threat to national security in the future, and yet this pronouncement has not sunk into the national collective consciousness yet, and certainly not in Washington. What do you and your colleague, Dr. Michael Mann, attribute the resilience of this denialism, and why do you believe climate change remains a lower priority in people's concerns than it should?
Well, I'll start with the first part of the question. The fossil fuel industry had a direct threat to their revenue source and has been directly and indirectly engaged in a disinformation campaign designed on the model of the arguments that were put forward by the tobacco industry, that tobacco wasn't harmful. It's been pretty much a carbon copy of the tobacco campaign. And the goal is to sow doubt in the political process, just sow enough doubt with the voting public and with congressional representatives to delay action. I mean, they know that the science will catch up with them eventually, always would. They did know that. Internal documents even shed some light on that. But their goal was just to delay the process a couple decades at least, and you can make a lot of money in that amount of time. The reason the public has been lagging in this and Congress has been lagging in action is twofold. One, the direct and indirect disinformation campaign that has been waged on this issue, probably first and foremost. But secondly, it's a very difficult type of political issue in that the threat is general, seems benign in the short run. It's diffuse in that it doesn't affect people immediately, personally, directly. But when they think about tackling it, the costs are viewed as coming up front, which is actually turning out to be less of an issue than everyone forecast because of the rapidity that green alternatives have been coming online. But as of now, even corporate leaders outside of the fossil, and even some in the fossil industry, are admitting, both publicly and privately, that they understand, that the science has been solid all along. I talked to somebody who's been involved politically in this issue, and he says, yes, privately, corporate CEOs will tell you they understand that climate is a genuine pressing problem, but they won't. That he said that they will say that everywhere up until the threshold of Congress, and that's where they stop. That will change. The question is, will it change fast enough to avoid even greater catastrophic damage than we probably have already baked into the system?
Some commentators and scientists, and I assume yourself, also believe that climate change denialism is nearing a tipping point, and it is through much of the world. Aside from the United States, other nations are adopting aggressive measures to dramatically reduce their reliance upon fossil fuels and to rapidly switch to clean renewables. U.S. polls continue to show climate change way down the ladder of the most urgent issues facing the nation. for whatever reason, in our own political body, there has been far more bottlenecking and clashes of ideology and superstitious belief systems for any realistic concerted action to be made. And I believe we will not see any policies emerging from the Hillary Clinton White House if she's elected to tackle the threats realistically. She is too indebted, in my opinion, to Wall Street, big oil, big gas, big nuclear, hydrofracking, and big coal. And that those are the ones that represent a substantial threat. And on the campaign trail through Appalachia in May, she backpedaled on opposing clean coal and then came out again in favor of it. And she promotes chemical industrial agriculture. She's a big promoter of Monsanto, Bayer, DuPont, and Syngenta, which have an enormous carbon footprint. And she flip-flopped on the XL pipeline, and she's been deathly silent about the protests and police violence at Standing Rock. So how can anyone truly expect to see a dramatic change in our energy policies with not just Clinton as president, but the people she will be bringing in who frequently come from the very industries that we should be very concerned about? And isn't the corporate Democratic Party more similar to the denialists on practical issues to confront climate change, since so little progress has been made under the Obama administration?
Well, that's quite a broad brush litany of charges, and I am neither inclined nor positioned to answer each and every one of them in detail. I will put it this way: I think Obama has been by far the best president with regard to climate. He started off building in a lot of support for green projects in the stimulus. He has acted to increase fuel mileage standards for American automobiles. And lately, he has been using the Clean Air Act, which actually for fortuitous reasons happened to include a reference to climate as a legitimate issue to use the act on, and has used that to help put pressure on scaling back coal-fired production. And I think all in all, and he did actually early in his administration work very hard to get a cap and trade bill, which probably would have been a little inferior to an out and out carbon tax, but Congress stopped that. But if you look at, you know, I can't tell you that Hillary Clinton would be my ideal candidate on climate change. The political circumstances in the United States are also far from ideal. I think she is far more likely to hold in place and advance at least modestly the climate agenda than her opponent Donald Trump is. But you can make the case that they're the same. I don't think of it as that at all. I think Hillary would be far better on climate.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you coming on and sharing your insights with us today, Tom. And Tom's book is called The Madhouse Effect, How Climate Change Denial is Threatening Our Planet. And your website is what, Tom?
It's The Madhouse Effect.
The Madhouse Effect.
Yeah.
Highly recommended reading. Thank you very much. I appreciate being
here. Thank you very much for having
me. I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening, and for those who believe that their voice against the dirty politics, the abhorrent record on human rights around the world, supporting dictatorships, supporting regimes that kill homosexuals, women, and children, give them no rights, providing $300 billion in weapons under her tenure as Secretary of State to places around the world that then fund terrorists. When you start looking at the aggregate of all this, then maybe it's time that we took some time and joined those demonstrators that I highly support who'll be outside of her office letting her office know there that at least they do not support that. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all and have a nice day.